In the dead of night, as people sleep, that is when the spirits creep. As the bell tolls three, dark things take power. We like to call it the supernatural hour. And now, our hosts.
Welcome to the Supernatural Hour podcast. I'm your host, Raven.
I'm Rogue.
This is Doc.
And I'm Chad.
Although, we needed to Zoom Rogue in, and my microphone was having issues, so I'm using Rogue's actual microphone, so I could be like Raven Rogue.
Rogue's just been really popular recently. Hasn't been able
I've
to
been
come
rogue.
And join us. You've been rogue. Going rogue.
Yes, I've gone rogue.
So I need to change out the cord on my mic or something. It's giving the buzzes. We don't like the buzzes.
You sound great right now.
Today, I'm excited about today because this podcast is actually the first of like a three-part series. And the overall series is Salem Witch Trials. We're going to be talking about different aspects of the Salem Witch Trial for our next three podcasts because Halloween, spooky season, it's coming up, folks. It is the middle of September, and that pretty much means it's open season to decorate for Halloween.
Still waiting for those leaves to change. Come on, leaves.
Little intro here for this three-part topic. We're going to start out with Giles Corey, and I just want to tell you all now, but we do need to get to our business and such.
Okay, talking about the business. First of all, we've got some public investigations coming up. Our first investigation coming up is going to be at Fort Douglas. That's September 25th at 8:30 p.m. to midnight. And that's going to be an exciting event. Tickets are available at the advancedparanormal.com events page. You can get them out on Eventbrite. But yeah, go out and get those. We're really excited to do this. That's always been a really fun investigation. It's historic. There's all sorts of trigger objects. There's all sorts of things there. It's one of my very favorite venues. Following that, on October 15th, we're going to go to Petit Neat School, and that's down in Payson. That's October 15th from 8 o'clock to midnight, and that's the school that Raven went to when she was a kid, so it is really spooky.
It is.
Because it is spooky season, there's a couple of other things going on. There is the Bridgerland Para X on October 9th, which we're going to be at. We're going to have our booth, and we'll be selling our Advanced Paranormal merchandise, much of which has been created and prepared by Rogue. We're excited to have that. It's going to be a fun time up there on October 9th. And then on October 29th and 30th, there's the Indian Hills Horror Haunted House, which is hosted by Klaus and at his place, and that's in Provo. We'll get more information on that, but that is a really good private haunt where everybody can come. There's no cost. There is a donations jar if people are interested in doing it, but Doc was one of the early workers on that, getting that set up and going, and Klaus has done that. It's been going about 15 years. They didn't do it last year because of COVID, but 2 years ago they had about how many people?
2,500.
It was amazing. So
yeah, 2,500 people showed up
over two nights,
over a couple of nights. It was pretty interesting because we had our event on Facebook and we had more likes and people interested than the mall did for their Halloween event. I had DJs and food trucks calling and asking if they could set up shop outside, and I had to inform them that this is a home haunt. We aren't a big, large commercial haunted house. But it'll be good. In terms of updates, Klaus just sent me a whole bunch of stuff. He bought, like, scents, different smells that go in the fog machines this year.
Wow.
Oh.
So we've got projectors, we've got black lights, we've got strobes, we've got foggers, we've got sound, and now we've got smells. So we're just rounding this thing out.
What kind of smells?
Charred corpse was one.
I was going to say,
One was called, I think, Haunted House. I don't know. I haven't smelled them yet, but from what I have been told...
Okay, we're up in the game here. Next year, I want food. I want samples of stuff.
There you go. Jeez.
Yeah, I have new.
We got taste. That's the last thing. We're just gonna have to add
sight,
that fifth
sound,
sense.
Smell, taste.
But here, would you like taste of rotting corpse? I'll pass. Thank you very
maybe.
Much.
But we, it's gonna be a pretty awesome event. It always is.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, they put on a great show. They make it kid friendly for kids as they go through, and they make it scary for teenagers.
Yeah, I've been
it's getting less kid friendly.
Yeah. I have been there every year since 2012, and it's been great every year.
Yeah,
we build on what we did the year before, and we just keep adding stuff. So,
and we are going to have a booth there. So, how much? What more can you ask for besides the whole taste thing?
Yeah, we'll do samples, and we'll do the Supernatural Hour / Advanced Paranormal booth.
Maybe we'll have candy at our booth. Maybe that'll be taste.
Oh yeah, we always hand out candy too. So if you just if you're in the area and you want one of those fun size Snickers bars or something, come on through.
And it's free, right? You don't charge people to come through?
It is absolutely free. Always has been. We started it with the intention of just bringing that element back to Halloween. We were a little disappointed by this big focus on trunk or treat, and everyone was so concerned about safety and not letting their kids go door to door. And we thought, we got to do something to bring this Halloween spirit back. And it's just become its own thing.
That's awesome.
I think very that's cool. It for the business.
All right, Rogue, we had an investigation recently.
We sure did. And I'll have to say that this investigation had one thing really going for it, and that is location, location, location. This was in a historical building downtown Salt Lake, and location alone, I think we all went, once we pulled up, all kind of had the feeling of, wow, there's something going on here just as a location, not, you know, just with the client.
I had a little bit of wood floor envy. They had beautiful floors, and just the woodwork in this apartment was out of this world.
And this apartment is a big apartment building in central downtown. I mean, kind of right in the middle of the old downtown area. And it's like a 3 or 4 story apartment building.
Built on the historical register.
Yeah, built in the late 1890s or early 1900s. Beautiful woodwork. It was a beautiful place. Like, and the apartment itself was awesome.
Built in like a bench in the living room. And I walked in. I'm like, I want to live here now. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. This was up in Salt Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
Yep, right.
Yeah,
right
downtown. Yeah, so that it was a great building. Do you think that every one of those apartments is decorated in that same decor?
No.
I think that's tenant.
That was a tenant-driven thing.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not positive on that. But
with all of that wooden, I mean, the way the wooden benches are built into it.
With the wooden benches and those things, I'm sure those were historic. Yeah, I'm sure it's that way. But the way that they had, the furnishings and everything in there is what I'm thinking of. But
well,
no, I think you're right. The architectural, the built-in benches and shelves and all of that stuff, I'm sure that's...
There's probably covenants that they have to keep that a certain way, considering that it's a historical building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's on the historic register.
Right. And that stuff just sits and absorbs energy, and we found more energy happening in that, 300-400 square foot space between the bedroom and that little opening in the living room than I think we've seen in any one location all at once.
Oh yeah, I reached out and touched that mirror, and it was over. I'm like, nope.
Mirrors, interesting things.
Yeah, and I think that mirror is a mirror that has been in the apartment. I don't think that's a mirror that has changed with tenants. So there's a lot of absorption of energy that has gone on in that apartment. And then the client with their own experience, that's what made that one interesting for me, the combination of the two.
Yeah, so just a little history. she had had a little bit of some hardships growing up, which did, you know, some ding of self-esteem. And I don't even know self-esteem, self-confidence. Her confidence took a battering. And because of that, there were some, you know, some darker entities that tried to take advantage of that weakness that she had.
The investigation was not just around the building and that, but also around events in her life and things that had been attached to her for some time. This wasn't an event or thing that had happened just as they got into this apartment, but it may have amplified
Correct.
In the apartment.
Correct. And some of the things that that they were saying were happening is her moods would change, you know, just out of the blue. She would act differently. They were arguing when they felt like they shouldn't be arguing. Were they, Rogue, do you remember, were they seeing things? I don't remember that they said they saw anything.
I don't think that they had seen anything. I think they just both feel things.
Right. And her husband was fairly sensitive. He's actually the one that noticed her mood swings more than she did.
Husbands do that.
True. We'll go there. No, but she, you know, we asked her if she had, you know, blackouts of time, and she said that she did. And that's always concerning. Because then you're looking into, you know, is those missing moments, you know, just something within her, or is it, you know, a demonic possession? Anyway, through the course of the investigation, we decided that she was not possessed, but she was definitely being acted on. We found... go ahead.
Did you mention, Raven, that she's pregnant?
No, I didn't.
So we also have that thrown into the puzzle.
Right. So, you know, she's tired and going through all these things anyway, but it wasn't just because of the pregnancy. You know, we asked questions about that, too. Things had gone on before, you know, the pregnancy and during the pregnancy. It's interesting, we found a female spirit in the home who was not so much acting as a protector spirit, but just trying to get their attention to tell them that there was something going on in the home. And this female spirit appeared as a woman from, did we decide, the late 17, early 1800s, based on her clothing?
Yes, and Raven, you got a picture of her. And that is amazing.
I did. I need to go back through and find that and post it. I mean, it's not clear as a bell. If you get them clear as a bell, you have to ask yourself, is that? But who was it that was it? Was it Andy that had seen her? Or
yes.
Was it you?
Yes. No, it was Andy who initially seen her when we went in. And then once I went into the bathroom was when I was first introduced to her.
Yeah, and then after we went and took pictures, you can see an outline of her.
You can see her puffy sleeves of her dress. It's a pretty amazing pic. You're going to have to get that up on TikTok.
So then, right across the street is an old church, and the church had, and by old church we're talking late 1800s, and it had a bell that kept dinging. And we said just the fact that there's this bell that chimes.
Like on the hour.
Hour.
It's church bells.
Half hour. Yeah. We said the likelihood of you having a real nasty, you know, demonic entity type 3 is a lot less because they don't like the sound of church bells. But we crossed a spirit over in this home. And while we had the light open, about 10 minutes worth of spirits that had been congregating over at the church.
Hey, there's an opening.
There's a portal. Let's go through it. Because usually when we cross something over, it takes, you know, 30 seconds to a minute. And we sat there holding this portal open for, what, a good 10 minutes?
At least. I was exhausted at the end of that. I really wanted to just go home and take a nap. It took everything out of me.
Oh, yeah. Every once in a while, because I'm, you know, I'll have my eyes closed, concentrating, and every once in a while I'd open my eye. It's like, did everyone teleport away and I'm just sitting here by myself?
Right, I agree.
Me and the spirits and this open portal. But it was cool, you know, because everyone was helping, and we needed everybody to help to keep that portal open that long. That was, a lot of people would just congregate at that church waiting to, you know, try to find some peace, and they found it that night. All 2,000 of them, holy cow, I don't know how many there were, but there were a lot.
There were. For me, it was like a scene out of the movie Poltergeist, the original, when she could just see that the line of spirits coming through. That's kind of what the visual was for me. And it just kept going and going and going and going. Like I said, it was really exhausting.
And one thing about spirits that we have found just in our investigations and, you know, just researching other investigations, if they haven't crossed over, they still act like they are when they're humans. So they're not going to walk through the wall. They're going to go through the motion of, you know, turning a doorknob. They might actually walk through the door. They might not have enough energy to physically open the door, but they will still go through the motions. So they don't just whoosh across the street and whoosh up to the portal. They're going to walk across the street and walk up the stairs and walk down the hall. And, you know, some of these spirits were older, and that's why one of the reasons it took so long. They all got in line. I mean, they all could have smushed together and gone through at the same time, but they all queued up in line like they're waiting to get a snow cone. And, you know,
did they keep turns. 6 feet of distance between each other?
No, super spreader.
No, they didn't play by COVID rules.
super spreader event for ghost COVID.
We hosted a super spreader event in downtown Salt Lake. Sorry. So, there was so much going on in this area, though. In the bathroom was a spirit, and this is the spirit that we initially crossed over, but he had committed suicide in the apartment, slitting his wrists. And we crossed him over, and they were feeling a lot of the anguish from him. And then,
because they were empaths, both of them, right?
Yes.
And they were feeling his, and that was a lot of the things they had to come to the realization of, is this isn't necessarily their own emotions, but emotions that they're tuning into.
Right, and that's one of the things that we told the woman. We said, some of these feelings that you're feeling, it's not you. You know, and you have to, if you're an empath and you're not aware of that, you know, you're thinking, oh, I'm suddenly really sad today and I don't know why. I'm suddenly really happy today. I don't know why. And so we had to tell her, you know, if an emotion just creeps up on you out of nowhere and you just, you know, you're so angry, but you ask yourself, there's no reason for me to be angry. You have to ask yourself, is this me or is this feeling coming from someone else? Because as an empath, it's really easy to take on other people's emotions as your own.
So, yes, it is.
So then this big mirror that we talked about, it was a big full-length mirror. And the way the apartment was, where I was sitting, the mirror was staring at me, but they had some doors. And I, at one point, I'm like, that mirror is just overpowering. I have to shut this door because I can't have this mirror staring at me. So in the course of the investigation, we got up, you know, to investigate the mirror. And I went over and felt it, and you could, it was just swirling. It was an angry, angry, angry portal mirror, a negative mirror. And it's old. And so, you know, again, probably have covenants in this apartment to keep it historical. So you can't say, well, take the mirror down and chuck it. So we just had to.
Yeah, wasn't it a built-in mirror?
Yeah. And great big. I mean, it was probably, what, 7 feet tall?
3 feet by seven, something like that.
3 feet wide or something.
Yeah, and it took up the whole wall.
Yeah. So we just had to box it in. We made a wall. So it's still there. But we, you know, shut it out of the apartment.
Because you couldn't, you know, blow the covenants away, right?
Yeah.
Raven has things with mirrors. I bought her a jewelry cabinet that has a mirror front on it. And I made the mistake of putting it in the bedroom where she could see it from the bed, the mirror. And it was no bueno.
It's kind of an interesting thought, though. I mean, if you look at, you know, magical practices, a lot of times they will use mirrors to evoke demons.
Oh, yeah.
I think. And the scrying kind of things where they're mm-hmm. looking into even a pool of water with the reflection.
Right. It's that reflective surface. I mean, crystal balls are kind of that same idea, too. But
ages ago, we did an episode on mirrors. That's something I would definitely like to revisit because it's an interesting topic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a definite one we could redo. We'll put that on the list.
We should.
Redo mirrors because it's interesting.
We can talk a little bit about invoking versus evoking
Yep.
entities.
So, Rogue, did we pretty much cover that investigation?
You missed something.
Oh, no. What did I miss?
The animal spirits.
Oh, yeah. Andy was seeing horses and cats. What else did she see?
I thought there were some dogs, too, but...
Probably.
Yeah, in the menagerie of all of these people and things heading for the portal.
So we should mention Andy is a client who is also a medium who asked us to join her on this case.
Right. She actually gave the client a reading. The client mentioned that there might be some things involved with not only her, possibly the house, and so she called us out. And little follow-up. Andy sent me a text the next day and said, for the first time in a very long time, they were able to sleep without nightmares. So when you get that feedback, you go, maybe we're actually helping somebody every now and then.
You did some good.
Did some good. That's what it's all about, is helping people. Alrighty. Main topic, back to Giles Corey. So we're doing a three-part series, like I mentioned earlier, and I am fascinated with the Salem Witch Trials. And to me, Salem Witch Trials is just the epitome of Halloween. You know, the witches and cauldron, toil and trouble, cauldron burn, boil and bubble.
Even the location, too, just being up in New England and the fall and the leaves. And
it's old up there.
Yeah, Sleepy Hollow.
Well, exactly. I mean, for the U.S., there's people listening to this in other countries.
Old.
Yeah, old, whatever.
Yeah, 1600s, huh? Doesn't seem that old.
So the little thing about Giles Corey is this is the same week is the anniversary of his death. When did he die, Rogue? When did you say his death was?
September 19th, 1692.
Okay, September 19th. Do you all know what September 19th also is?
Come National on. Ghost Hunting Day.
No, that's the 24th.
Okay.
No, September 19th is Talk Like a Pirate Day.
How did I not know this?
I don't know.
How do we not all know this?
So
is that not common knowledge?
So Giles Corey was killed on Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Maybe he talked like a pirate.
Maybe that was a little insensitive. I'm sorry. I like Talk Like a Pirate Day, okay? Come on.
There you go.
So Giles Corey is... For those that don't know who he was the only man that was killed, tried, and executed as a witch in the Salem Witch Trials. And Chad and I have been there. We went there a few years ago.
Yeah, Salem was a very neat place to go. We missed it just as it was coming into the season.
Yeah, I think the season started about a week after we were there. And I tried to muscle my way into some places that were closed. I said, we are clear from Utah. Can we just come in? And they said no.
I was there in October, and it was pretty spectacular. It's an interesting place.
But there were still quite a few places we could get into. I mean, I don't feel like it was a... I mean, the shops were open. The witch house was open.
And one of the things I got to say... Go ahead.
Did either of you on your trips go to the Howard Street Cemetery?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember.
So I think the Howard Street Cemetery is the oldest cemetery there, correct?
And it's where they're buried, where the witches are buried from the trials. And then I noticed, like, there's apartments right there. Like, they didn't even give, like, 6 feet, and they built there's apartment buildings right there.
Yeah, when I was there, the cemetery, they have a memorial there and a few other
markers. There's a memorial just laid out right boom, boom, boom next to each other for all of those.
Victims?
Yeah, yes. And, you know, when I was there, there was fresh flowers that people were still laying out on, you know, the memorial site, basically.
I think it's Salem, just in general, is a pilgrimage for people that... identify as witches that practice witchcraft.
Oh yeah, that town has embraced the whole witch thing. You know, you go one of two ways with this. You try to just ignore your past and pretend nothing happened, or you just dive in and say, we're going to take this witch theme and we're going to run with it.
Now, witchcraft, this could be a whole other topic on its own, so I want to get back into Giles Corey, but I think witchcraft is interesting because it has such a negative connotation, and you can do bad things with it, like anything. Anything can be used for good or bad. It's how you use it. But a lot of the people that I've talked to in this, you know, in this field that are witches and practice Wiccan. Witchcraft, most people, it's just nature stuff. It's just, you know, using nature, using herbs, using natural remedies, natural things.
Many of the kinds of practices and things that were done with the Celts pre-Christianity, that kind of stuff.
Right, that's kind of Wicca, neo-paganism, that kind of stuff. You know.
Right, I've run into probably a dozen people that say, I'm a witch, and not one of them is out sacrificing children in the backyard with eye of newt and hair of toad. I haven't run into any of them.
Right.
It's usually put a pot of daisy in your kid's room and the demons won't come in.
I think the definition of what constitutes a witch has changed pretty significantly since 1692.
Right. So let's talk about Corey a little bit. So before the whole witch thing, let's delve into his earlier years as far as we know. He was actually considered to be... So at the time of the witch trials, he was in his 80s. So he wasn't some strapping, you know, 30-year-old bloke. And to get to the age of 80 in the 1600s, I mean, that in and of itself could probably be considered witchcraft.
What are you doing to live so long, you witch?
Right? Do you have a sorcerer's stone? Is your name Nicholas Flamel? I'm going to be that person that puts a Harry Potter reference in everything. That's my new shtick.
And I'll still be the person shaking her head going, I don't understand.
Okay, you and I have to have a Harry Potter marathon, lady. We got to get you up to snuff here.
And we can put other movie references in, too.
Okay, folks, this is a new thing. I just came up on the fly. If I do a podcast without a Harry Potter reference, you let me know and I'll give you a candy bar. Okay, so he's 80, so he's already lived most of his life, right? But... because he was so old and the town is so small and they didn't do a whole lot of traveling back in those days. You know, if you traveled, it was, you know, within 10 miles.
A few miles, yeah.
Right. So a lot of people considered him to be a violent man already. He was, let's see, in 1676, he had a farmhand by the name of Jacob Goodale. And Giles Corey, beat him. He was charged with beating this farmhand to death. Killed him. And he stood trial, and there's a fellow by the name of John Proctor testified that he heard Giles Corey admit he had beaten Goodale. But I don't know why, but they just find him. They're like, all right, pay us $100, you're good to go. They didn't put him away. I don't know why. It didn't go into that. You know, it's the 1600s. We don't have a ton of records and forensic evidence and stuff, but he was only fined. And so when it came time, you know, for the witch trials and all the things that came down, for him to be, you know, charged with that, he already had a ding against him. You know, the people in the town already...
didn't love the man?
Didn't love him and were suspicious of him to begin with things that were completely unrelated with
also,
witchcraft.
Also, when I was looking into him, I found that at the time of the witch trials, he was on his third wife. But when they were looking back at him, they felt like he had murdered his first wife, Mary, because they first deemed it as an accident that she fell down the stairs. But when they looked at it, they showed where the stairs were that the two stairs didn't connect. So it really didn't make sense that she died falling down the stairs. So they actually accused him of killing his first wife as well.
Right, which, and then, you know, he killed his farmhand. It's not completely, and he admitted to it, not completely out of the realm of possibility.
Right. And it sounds like as this all, the witch trials kind of evolved, interestingly, involving his third spouse. She was accused of being a witch as well. It's kind of where that starts out, right? And it sounds like he was kind of on board with it when it first happened. He's like, oh, yeah, she might be a witch.
You know, the tensions were so high back then. I think if you sneezed funny, they probably accused you of being a witch.
You know,
Princess Bride. A witch! A witch!
from what I was. They made these accusations, and they're like, "Hey, we think your wife's a witch." He's like, "Yeah, probably." And then all of a sudden, it's like, "And you're a witch too." And he's like, "Oh no, that's not true."
Right, because he called and he's like, "Well, she could be a witch. My cat died, and my ox is kind of sick, so I don't know." And so then they take her away. And then a little while later, he's like, "Well, you know, maybe she wasn't a witch." And they're like, "Well, maybe you are a witch."
Trying to cover
for her now. What a crazy time.
Right. Well, and then, you know, you talked about the illness of the ox and the pet cat. You know, he claims that there was a sudden illness. And then he told everybody, you know, my ox and my pet cat just, boom, out of the blue got sick. But I noticed that my wife stays up late at night and she kneels by the fireplace like she's praying. And they said, you know, "Do you hear her reciting any prayers?" And he's like, "No, she just kneels there." So obviously she's a witch.
If you're not hearing those prayer words, witch.
Definitely. Because heaven forbid you like say the words in your head.
Don't meditate. Don't be thinking about stuff. You got to be saying stuff.
I figure.
Don't go and sit close to the fire when it might be cold.
Right. I figure, you know, it's a little chilly. She's probably there looking at the fireplace going, "Oh, I've got to clean this out. Just one more thing for me to do."
And she's thinking, "As long as I'm sitting here, he's not going to bug me because I'm praying."
Right, because he was a jerk.
That's right. As long as I'm praying, he'll leave me alone.
You get people a little afraid, and you just can whip them up into a frenzy, and then you start thinking crazy, crazy stuff. And then Corey Giles died. The end. Good night.
Podcast over.
All right.
We've got more to talk about.
That was cool.
One of the things they said was when they started having the trials, you know, there's the girls, and we'll get more into this in the next podcast, the actual Salem witch trials, we're building up to the big event, but the girls that started this accusation, you know, there's the accusations and the talking, when they finally started having the trials, Giles and his wife at the time, Martha, were some of the first people to attend these, you know, pre-trial examinations. It's almost like they wanted to be in the thick of things, you know, were they pot stirrers? Were they, you know, why? Why were they the first ones? Ooh!
Maybe they were just curious.
You know,
I mean,
exactly.
Come on.
Are they just curious?
You're putting people on trial for being witches. It's pretty interesting stuff, right?
Their subscription to HBO had expired.
That's right.
They didn't have Netflix and chill.
I already binge-watched all the shows. We're just going to come to the trial.
Pre-TikTok. Precursor to TikTok with the trials, right? We might have to cut this out while we research a little bit. Hang on. So, you know, so everything goes down. He goes to trial. And even the trials, it would have been interesting to be a fly on the wall and watch these trials. Because I'm sure the people at the time were not amused. You know, because they were killing people. You know, they were burning people at the stake.
They didn't burn anybody at the stake.
That's true. As I was saying that, I realized
they were hanging people. Though
they were hanging people.
They're killing people. They're killing.
The burning at the stake was a different.
That's European.
Thing.
Yeah, it's so European.
Jonah
burning
Arc kind of stuff.
Stake.
If you go to Edinburgh and you're on the Royal Mile, there's a little plaque on a wall that shows. Oh no! It shows where they drowned, which has not burned them at the stake. Never mind. Still interesting,
hey,
though.
However, you know, there's multiple ways.
Yeah, so, no, they weren't burned. They were, So that's what happens when I improvise. I tell the wrong stories. But if you go to the Royal Mile in Edinburgh, up towards the top, there's a little plaque, and it talks about how they dunked the witches there. Nothing to do with, there's no burning. We are not talking about any burning witches today.
I heard a theory on that in an important documentary on Monty Python, where they were talking about why witches floated and didn't, and ducks. Do you remember that?
I do.
Oh,
do you remember
this is painful. Well, it's Monty Python, so y'all know it's painful, so let's hear it.
I don't remember. It's just something that he's giving the explanation of why witches don't float or do float, because they're way the same as a duck.
That's right. So logically, if a witch weighs more than a duck...
If the witch weighs
less than a duck, then they're going to get
if they float, then
killed.
So it works out. If they drowned and don't float, they're dead and they weren't a witch. But if they do float, they're a witch. So then you take them out and burn them at the stake.
But only if you're in Europe.
That's a great test.
That's right.
But only if you're in Europe.
You want to drown or you want to burn?
Okay. Back to
reality.
Well, I don't know that I don't know
sanity,
this is sanity here. But I'm sure that at the time it was very stressful because, you know, people were dying, right? But looking back at this now, it's almost comical, and I just don't understand. So they've got Giles Corey on the stand, and they're examining him, right? And they've got these judges, and they're questioning him, and they keep telling him that he's lying. You know, you're lying. And they were so afraid that he was going to practice witchcraft sitting on the stand that during his trial, they had to tie his hands behind his back so that he couldn't wave his fingers and do hocus pocus.
Because that's what it's all about, waving fingers.
Yeah, and one of them, there was a court record written by a fellow named Reverend Samuel Paris. And he says, "All the afflicted were seized now with fits and troubled with pinches. Then the court ordered his hands to be tied. And the magistrate said, 'What, is it not enough to act witchcraft at other times, but must you do it now in the face of authority?' And Corey said, 'I am a poor creature and cannot help it.' Upon the motion of his head, they had their heads and necks afflicted. Magistrate, why do you tell such wicked lies against witnesses that heard you speak after this manner this very morning?' And Corey said, 'I never saw anything but a black hog.'" That's how that went down. So they decided he was a witch and tied his hands so that he wouldn't...
So people wouldn't be afflicted with pinches.
Yes.
And the shakes, apparently. There's seizure-like activity.
Yes.
And they're like, "Why are you doing this?" And he's like, "I don't know. I'm not doing anything. I can't control this stuff."
At one point, they untied his hands because they started feeling bad. I mean, he's an 80-year-old man. I mean, he's, you know.
Oh, and I'm sure that activity, boom.
Right. But as soon as they untied his hands, one of the girls in the audience started having fits.
He's got to be guilty.
Yeah, it's got to be a witch.
The guy probably had, like, dementia too. He's like 80 years old. He's like, "I don't know, I'm not trying." And they're like, "Nope, you're a witch, die, man, die."
Now Corey initially was kind of into this whole thing, you know. He really got into it. Yeah. He was one of the first people there.
They showed up at the pre-trials, right?
And I mean, to the point that he even participated in accusing his own wife.
Right.
"She's a witch, she's a witch."
But after a while, he kind of lost his steam, and I don't know if it's just he realized the severity of it. I don't know.
You're like, "Nah, it was cute when it started, but like, so for real, people are dying now." So
yeah,
at what point
do you go, "Oh, wait a minute"?
Once you become accused as a witch,
that's a pretty good point.
That's a good point to stop. And it sounds like after the accusation, he refused to enter a plea. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he pretty much, you know, just got really stubborn. And so, you know, they started torturing him. And
because the best pleas come out under torture.
Yeah, when you're under duress.
Yep. So it says he had taken advantage of a widely used legal tactic, and this legal tactic was called standing mute when he was asked questions.
Pleading the fifth, basically.
Pleading the fifth, uh-huh. So English law at that time ordered any prisoner who stood mute to be tortured in attempt to unmute.
I didn't see that in the Fifth Amendment.
I know, which I'm very glad. I'm glad they refined that a little bit.
That part was updated slightly.
Thank you. So it was a tactic known as pien fort et dur, which is probably French. And if you speak French, I know that that sounded about as great as my singing. So I apologize. But it translates into strong and harsh punishment. So the exact torture procedure consisted of, and if you remember, we did a torture device episode last year about this time, give or take. And people can just really be nasty to each other. But what they would do in Salem, they would strip the prisoner naked, they'd lay him on the ground, place a board on him, and then they would put heavy stones on it. And the weight was slowly increased over the course of several days until the prisoner said, "Fine, you know, here's the information."
I mean, they're guilty or not guilty, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Corey kind of knew this was going to happen. He actually, before this happened, he took measures to protect his lands and to block local authorities from taking his possessions, which I find is interesting. It's almost like he knew this
he
was going to
die.
Down.
Yeah. Yep. There's no way out after, after the accusation points.
Well, and some of the things on this, some of the accusations were about that. There were family feuds that had been taken, that had been happening and things, and it's like, I can take revenge on this other person by accusing them of being a witch because, they did a bad deal on the pig with me. Mm-hmm. I felt like I got cheated on the pig, and so, hey, they're a witch.
And I don't have to prove that I got cheated. I just have to...
Make an accusation
that someone's going to believe.
And everyone's going to run with it, because no matter what you do, once you're accused, it was in such a frenzy that...
A little Me Too-ish.
Yes. And I think he got to the point where, when he said he really kind of stepped back away from it, I think he realized, wow, this is serious. I'm probably going to go down. And the way he safeguarded his property is he actually gave his property to his sons and sons-in-law so that the sheriff couldn't seize it, because the sheriff had been seizing property of
the witch accused.
Of the accused.
That is pretty smart, and I think they still live there and own the property to this day, from what I could tell from my current research.
The Giles family?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, so this isn't funny. The next thing I'm going to say is not funny, but the picture I have in my mind, I feel so bad for this man, because they're pressing him. Okay, he gets to the point where they're like, no, you're a witch. We're going to try to get this information out of you. We're going to make you confess, lay down. We're putting a board on you.
And he's 80 years old.
Right? 80, folks. In the 1600s.
And the only thing he's saying to them is more weight, because he's not going to say he's a witch. So
right, he was not.
He knows he's
going to
die.
He was not going to confess. So there they are, this 80-year-old man. They're pressing to death with stones, and he keeps saying, more stones, so they're adding more on. So while he's there literally being squished, and I don't mean that with any disrespect, I really don't, but that's what is happening.
He's being crushed to death.
He's being crushed to death. And then somebody from the church comes over and is like, oh, on top of it all, you're excommunicated now.
Yeah, thanks for holding true. Yeah, we're done with you.
I just thought, wow. He had a really bad day.
Yeah. And then his tongue was hanging out. And so they thought, well, he can't answer you because he's dehydrated and his tongue is hanging out. So they would pay, I think it was the sheriff or somebody would have somebody like once an hour go over and stick his tongue back in his mouth so he would have the opportunity to talk. And they said that his eyes were bulging out also.
From all the pressure.
Yeah,
so in the church documents, when they excommunicated him, the document said that he was either guilty of witchcraft or of suicide due to his choice to endure lethal torture rather than enter a plea.
So, and either one of them's excommunicatable.
No heaven for you, is what they're basically telling him.
Yep.
You ended up in a predicament beyond your control, and you have two bad options. No matter which one you choose, we're done.
Now,
that's karma for you, right, though? He's got a little bit of karma coming back to him for what we know he did do to his farmhand.
He's got a history, that's for sure.
Right. So the one interesting thing about his execution was, he was tortured for days. This didn't just happen over a course of a couple hours. It was days, multiple days. So he was a tough 80-year-old.
Yeah, stubborn, super stubborn.
At the end, the sheriff got on I think it was like after day three, the sheriff got on top of 750 pounds and started jumping up and down on the rocks, telling him, just say you're a witch, just say you're a witch. And that was putting him like in his final last breaths.
Right.
That kind of took him to the end.
And even though he was a violent man and killed somebody, you do have to kind of give him some kudos.
Allegedly killed somebody.
No, he confessed that he did.
To someone, but not in court.
Yeah.
Right?
No, this was...
Someone said he killed someone.
This was the farmhand. This wasn't witch stuff.
No, that's what I'm saying. That was still somewhat alleged or...
So, you know, so regardless how violent he was or was not, you do have to give him some kudos that he was sticking to his guns. I am not a witch, and I'm not going to say it, even if you squish me with 750 pounds of rocks.
And the sheriff. Yeah, that's so, pretty darn impressive, actually.
But a positive thing, you know, so he got his karma, you know. Let's say he killed the farmhand, it actually happened. He did get his karma. But the interesting thing is, due to the gruesomeness of his execution and how very public it was, and, you know, how vehemently he was denying it, it said that a lot of the residents of Salem started to question the whole thing.
You know,
should we be doing this? Is this really a thing? You know, what are we doing? They took pause. They stepped back and were like, whoa.
Maybe we went too far.
Let's rethink some things.
And didn't that basically end the witch trials?
I think so. I think that was definitely where it started to take that downturn and calm down.
But we do have to mention, with his final words, his words to the sheriff were, he cursed the sheriff.
And this is amazing.
So, do you want to talk about that? So he cursed. I didn't write down the exact words that he used. But then the sheriff, within 6 months, died of a heart attack. And then for 300 consecutive years, all sheriffs working in Salem died of heart attacks.
Yes.
Or some type of blood disease.
Yeah, so the exact
until
words.
They moved the sheriff department.
Mm-hmm. I actually wrote it
in
down.
In the 90s.
He said, "Damn you, I curse you, and Salem." And Corey said that to the sheriff before he died. And then it says, 4 years after he died, Sheriff Corwin, who was the jumping up and down sheriff, the sheriff at the time, died of a heart attack at 30 years old. And every sheriff from 1692 until 1991 had, you know, died of mysterious incidences. There's one in the 1970s. There was a fellow named Sheriff Robert Cahill. He was forced to retire early due to a stroke, heart attack, and rare blood condition. And he looked into the history of the sheriff's office. And there's a book. It's described in the book Cursed in New England. So it says, about 300 years later, in 1978, Robert Cahill, while in office, suffered a rare blood disease, a heart attack, and a stroke. Doctors could not find the cause of his afflictions. He was forced to retire as sheriff of Essex County and as master and keeper of the jail. Today he lives in Florida. Mr. Cahill notes that the sheriff before him also contracted a serious blood ailment while in office. It forced him to retire. He, in turn, had inherited the post from his father after the elder man died of a heart attack while serving as sheriff. The sheriff before him had suffered heart problems, so have all the others as far back as I could trace. And the two men who have followed me have had an awful lot of trouble.
So it makes you wonder. If the curse is real.
Yeah.
Or is it donuts?
Ah, could be that. High fat content. good point. Good point.
So in 1991, they actually moved the sheriff's office from Salem to a new prison in Middleton. And they think that's what broke the curse. Because they said since then, no sheriffs have been diagnosed with any heart conditions or blood ailments.
Moved it out of Salem, huh?
Yep. Now, they... Local residents say that Corey's ghost haunts the area around the Howard Street Cemetery, and that his ghost is often seen before and after terrible events happen in the town. So if you see Giles Corey, get out of Dodge, because something bad's going to go down.
Salem's not a very big town, either.
It's not.
Pretty small. It's very walkable.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when you asked about the cemetery, I was thinking... I went to the main cemetery. I don't know if there's another one.
And I don't know, are they actually, I don't think that they're actually buried there. Are they buried there, or do they just have memorials there? I thought they just had memorials of all the
My understanding is
there.
Giles Corey is buried in an unmarked grave, and that they have the memorial set up there to
And that would have been the case with probably all of the witches, because
you weren't worthy of a gravesite.
Right, you didn't get the Christian burial. You didn't get the
they just dug a hole out in the ground. Unhallowed ground.
Just throw you in it.
Interesting.
So let me give you an example of a terrible event. It was right before the Great Salem Fire in 1914. Have you guys heard about that one? And witnesses said that before this fire, they saw a ghostly figure of an old man floating through the cemetery. And the fire actually started near the area of Gallows Hill.
There's like a playground there now.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a weird place to put a playground.
And this Gallows Hill isn't where the hangings were done.
No, there you go.
We'll talk about that in another podcast.
Ooh, probably in follow-up two or three.
But that's the story, is that this... the fire started near the area of Gallows Hill.
And where the ghostly apparition was.
Well, the apparition was in the cemetery.
Hmm.
But there is some good news. There's some good news. In 1711... the Massachusetts state legislature passed a bill clearing some of the names of the accused witches, which included Giles and Martha Corey, and they paid restitution for their imprisonment and death.
That was less than 20 years later? Is that right? I mean, it was 1692 when they died.
1692 and then 1711, so yeah. 19 years.
Wow. You came to acknowledge the error of your ways fairly quickly if it took you less than 2 decades to exonerate or, you know...
And then I'm looking through my notes, and I don't see where I wrote it, but I do believe that the church re-communicated them.
Unexcommunicated.
Unexcommunicated. What's the right word?
Would it just be communicated?
Get restored their membership.
Reinstated, yeah.
That's a good one. Reinstated.
He was reinstated into the church.
Yeah. Words. If you want eloquence, I am not it.
Nope, don't sign me up.
All right. So, there's a thing that says Giles Corey Memorial Marker is located in the Salem Witch Trials Memorial in Salem, Massachusetts. He and his wife also have two memorial markers at their former farm near Crystal Lake in Peabody, Massachusetts. Do you notice how I said Peabody?
Instead of Peabody?
If you go to Massachusetts, Peabody. They say Peabody. So now I say that and act like I'm really cool because I know stuff.
I would have said Peabody. I would have said it wrong.
It's Peabody. There you go.
Like lobster.
Your trivia today. Pot the cough. Go to the Peabody Cemetery.
That's right.
If you're from Massachusetts, I'm very sorry. I mean no disrespect. I actually have a really good friend that's from the Boston area, and it's really cool to listen to his accent.
Dude, they own the accent, though. Like, they're proud of it. It's great.
That's awesome. Okay, so our next two podcasts are going to be Salem Witch Trial-y. Look forward to that because I am super excited. Giles Corey, I find him very interesting. I find the whole thing very interesting, but just get into the spookiness of Halloween and witches and all things haunted. All right, Doc, do you have a bucket list for us?
Bucket list item. I don't know if I've spoken about this one yet, but I want to go to Goatman Bridge.
Oh, I don't know that I've ever...
You haven't spoken about that one yet.
No. Oh, good.
I think it sounds vaguely familiar, but...
I would have remembered Goatman
Bridge. Goatman Bridge. There's a couple... So Goatman Bridge is a bridge that's up in Denton, Texas. It's probably, I don't know, 30 minutes from where I lived. I didn't know about this place until after I moved.
You would have gone there.
I would have totally gone to Goatman Bridge.
You went to Oklahoma to
Joe Exotic.
I went and saw Joe Exotic for Pete's sake, and that was like a 2-hour drive. I would have gone to Goatman Bridge if I would have known it was there. But the story behind Goatman Bridge, there's a bridge up in Denton that is allegedly haunted or cursed by an entity known as the Goatman. And there's kind of two different legends. One is that it's a demon that's, you know, has like goat and human features. And that if you, you know, call for the goat man on the bridge and knock 3 times, that it'll show up. And there's these, you know, stories of people being thrown from the bridge. And yeah, I thought it was kind of an interesting thing. The other legend was that there was a black farmer, a goat farmer, who was killed by the Ku Klux Klan, and that his spirit, I guess you could say, is what haunts the bridge. And if anybody tries to incite or agitate the goat man, that he'll come and kill you.
This reminds me of the fairy tale Billy Goat Gruff.
The Billy Goat's Gruff.
Do you guys know that one?
It's been a while.
I don't remember it very well. It just came to me right now. Poof.
There are goats.
But you have to, the Billy Goat Gruff, in order to cross his bridge, you have to solve a riddle.
Mm-hmm.
Remember this? Is this ringing a bell?
It's been a while.
I'm getting the Monty Python sparrow question.
Oh, God.
Crossing the bridge.
We have another Monty Python reference in this podcast. Oh, my gosh. It's like at least three.
Well, isn't Monty Python like the oracle of all knowledge?
I suppose. But yes, so back to Goatman Bridge. Yeah, I guess we got Billy Goat's Gruff and Monty Python references.
Yeah, because as you're talking about it, I just thought, oh yeah, Billy Goat Gruff, it's a thing.
Knock three times, call out the Goatman and see what happens.
Oh, I was going to go with knock three. I told you I'd never sing. You know the song from the 70s, knock three times on the ceiling.
Tony Orlando and Dawn?
Yes.
All right, we're going to move this forward before singing break.
We really knew, too. She's going
to sing. I'm going to go ahead and end that there.
Okay, I promised you I'd never sing again. I'm so sorry.
I was going to say, that kind of reminds me of our Insiders episode that we did about the Bunny Man.
Yeah.
And the bridge, where we talked about that.
What is it with bridges and spooky things?
We got a goat man, we got a bunny man.
Yeah, it sounded kind of reminiscent of that.
Just with animal, man, and bridge.
Billy Goat Gruff, Billy Bunny Gruff, Billy Goat sounds better.
So our insiders get access to those insider things, so if you want to find out about the Bunny Man.
Yeah, there was a lot of different legends there, too. It wasn't like there was just one story. There was a bunch of different legends that kind of led up to the Bunny Man lore.
Right.
Goat Man's kind of the same way.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if there were any documented murders. There's been stories, but I don't know that we've had any documented.
Okay, so I know that at some point you're going to get there. So if you do go, you need to take pictures. I want to see this.
I'm down.
Okay.
I'm sure I'll be going back to the Dallas-Fort Worth area at some point.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you will be.
Because there will be football games there soon.
Oh, yeah. There definitely will be.
If you're football people, our team just got into the Big 12. We're pretty stoked.
And TCU's in Fort Worth. And I lived there. Let's do it.
This podcast, we've covered pretty much everything. Football, which is Monty Python, Harry Potter.
Bad 70s music.
Bad rogue singing. Or, I'm sorry, not bad rogue singing. I don't even know my own name.
I was like, really? I haven't been singing yet?
I was like, one, I'm not bad. Two, I haven't sung. Bad Raven singing. I'm sorry. Rogue, do you have a personal experience you'd like to share with us?
Maybe. No, I'm just kidding.
After that,
not
maybe
anymore.
Not.
Right? Maybe I don't want to share anything.
I'm going to share an experience when I won a talent contest.
You know,
I was in elementary school.
You know how I make a little thumbnail to put on Facebook to advertise this? I'm just going to say the team talks about everything.
Everything.
All right. Great. Sorry, Rogue. Go ahead.
That's a big open story. So, I had to think about this. I have a few experiences that have happened in my life, but I wanted to share, I had a house in Murray. This house has now been torn down and a school has been built on top of it. This whole street that I lived on, the people bought these homes brand new in the 40s, and they were homes that they raised their families in and they were meant to be there for retirement. A lot of people lived into these homes until they passed away. And I came along and I purchased one of these homes that the people had just recently passed away, and I had moved into this home. So they, you know, had been in this home for 40 plus, 50 plus years, I don't know, 60 years. They've been in it for a very long time. And when they left, I don't think they ever really left the home. So for me, every Saturday morning was wake up to bacon and eggs. She would make sure that there was breakfast every morning, And in the evenings, I could see him outside. He had a meticulous lawn, and I could not live up to his standards. But he would be out there doing lawn yard work, and I could see him out there doing yard work. People would come to my homes, be sitting in my kitchen. You could look out, and they'd go, "Who's out in your yard doing something?" And I'd be like, "No, the old man that used to live here." They just kept, I felt like when I lived in that house that they were kind of living their lives there. I do know that he had gone to the gymnasium and he had a heart attack at the gym. She was at home at the time when it had happened. So I think that was pretty traumatic. So I believe that he came home. After that happened, she went into a care facility and she passed on relatively quickly. So I believe that my home was a meeting place for them both. I think that they both passed on, but I think the house was a happy place for them. And in that home, it was a daily occurrence. We just lived amongst that family in that house. So I think that's the best experience I could share with you today.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Too bad the bacon and eggs weren't real.
Right? I mean, I would get up some mornings going, "Oh, really? Someone cooked for me?" And yeah, no.
That never. Is such an awesome
smell. She never
smell
left me any.
To wake up to, though. I'd love waking up to the smell of food.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad thing. And, you know, sometimes I would wake up because my bedroom was downstairs and it was his old office. And sometimes I would wake up just with that feeling of him just sitting there staring at me like, "What are you doing here? Like, I have no idea what you are doing here." So it was definitely interesting. I felt like there was hidden things in the walls. So that house was taken from me. Like I said, a school is on top of it now, so it has now been destroyed. So I knew I was moving out of this home, that it was going to be destroyed. So I did tear down some things looking for treasures, but I never did find anything. But I'm still confident that there were treasures hidden in that house that he couldn't get to for her.
Oh, wow.
We'll never know.
Nope. Well, thank you.
Uh-huh.
So we have next our segment that you all are familiar with, the junk drawer. And this one, actually, Rogue, you found this one.
Yeah, hilariously enough, yes. Yes, I did.
And where's it from?
It's from like the National Enquirer, the National Examiner. Enquirer.
You have you actually have like a newspaper or magazine in front of you. This is nice.
Yes, I bought it. So I'm like, we have to buy this.
I'm intrigued.
So this
we were lying at the grocery store.
If you remember back in the day of wacky paranormal news, and that's really hard to find, by the way. We wanted to keep that segment, but that's just hard to find. But this junk drawer is more along the lines of a lost, wacky paranormal news. So bear with me because we're just going to read this gem. I'm not gonna summarize this. We are reading this baby word for word because you will love every single word.
When you shell out the money for the National Examiner?
National Examiner.
You got to read it word for word.
Got to read it word for word. Okay, so the title, I Married the Ghost of Michael Jackson.
Wow, there's layers to this.
It's like an onion. This is an onion. There are so many layers. Shrek reference for you. We literally are going to talk about everything today.
Married the Ghost of Michael Jackson.
It gets better.
Does she get royalties?
Oh, just wait. So, psychic reveals special bond with the late pop legend. Here we go. The whole world knows pop superstar Michael Jackson. Hang on, I need glasses. Hang on. I'm old. I need glasses. All right. Here we go. There we go. Oh, hey, I can see. All right. Michael Jackson, who died on June 25th, 2009. He had two wives during his life on Earth, but now a woman claims she's wife number three because she's been married to his ghost 4 years. Not 4 years, but four years.
For a bunch of years.
Okay. So the King of Pop was wed to Lisa Marie Presley from 1994 to 1996 and Debbie Rowe from 1996 to 1999. So Kathleen Roberts, who is a professional medium, believes she and the King of Pop are husband and wife and that his spirit now inhabits her body and has since 2010. So we're going on, 12 years now, right? He stays possessed in me, relaxed, just enjoying living through me and communicating as a husband, says Roberts, who appears in her own YouTube videos in which she speaks as Michael in his voice. So you can look her up and
wow.
find more out
she
about this.
She actually does Michael Jackson voices.
Yeah, so this is, this is a two-page spread, okay, with a lot of pictures. But if you want to know more, you just hit her up on her YouTube channel. But I'll tell you more. Ready? Kathleen, and she speaks in his voice, so you can hear his voice again. She's American. She doesn't give out her exact location, but she says she was always a big fan of Michael's and has a crush on him and had a crush on him when he was alive. And when he died, it was incredibly difficult for her. It was like losing a family member, remembers Kathleen. I cried. I grieved. It was hard on me to get up in the morning. And I cried day and night. I cried when I was at work. It was very hard. Kathleen believes she is the reincarnation of screen siren Marilyn Monroe, and that Jackson was initially attracted to her because of this resemblance, and I'm showing everybody the picture.
I'm going to go with a hard pass on that.
She doesn't remind you of Marilyn Monroe?
Let's see. She has
blonde hair.
Other than that.
Okay.
And it looks like it's bleached. So but I think Marilyn's was too.
Yes.
So don't be too disappointed that you're not. She does not look like Marilyn Monroe. Go to the YouTube video. You can watch. Okay. So Jackson was initially attracted to her because of this resemblance and also her childlike personality and small hands and feet.
Small hands.
And feet.
After communicating telepathically for a few months, she woke up one morning and Michael was moving her fingers and hands. He was inside me. He was moving them, and he said to not be afraid. If you can see Doc's face right now, it's just classic. She says in one of her YouTube videos, he does concerts for me, he performs, he speaks through me, and does messages for other people. They got to know each other, and then he clairvoyantly popped the question with a pink engagement ring. After she said yes, he made himself very at home inside of her body. And they even had the late Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who was assassinated in 1968, officiate their nuptials, which took place as she was getting out of her bathtub. Because that's exactly what I want to get married, is as I'm dripping wet with my hair hanging in my eyes. That's exactly how I want to look.
I'm just thinking.
I'd only known that.
I think I've had people committed to a mental institution for less crazy stuff.
Oh, we're only like like three quarters of a page through.
All right, keep it going.
There's more gems here.
Oh my gosh.
I had a towel around my body and he pulled me aside and he channeled through me, she recalls. Although the thriller hitmaker shies away from having sex with Kathleen, she says he likes to use her body to dance, sing, and eat. All he wants to do is eat cookies, she laughs. Mm.
That's why she was a little heavy in that picture.
It's not her. It's Michael. He likes cookies, okay?
Are you sure she didn't marry Cookie Monster? Like, what? I'm just wondering. I married a Sesame Street character. It's just as plausible.
I mean, Jim Henson has died.
See? Oh, my gosh.
And people pay money for this, like me. The lack of intimacy is very disappointing for Kathleen. Mm. It's disappointing. Who has repeatedly tried to take the relationship to the next level, but every time she gives sex a go with a former crotch-grabbing star, he immediately backs off.
I like that description, the crotch-grabbing star.
I was going to say the same thing.
That's what it says.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just reading the fine print. He doesn't like being touched back, she confides. He scares me with spider visions and dead corpse visions if I kiss him or try to initiate romance physically. But other private situations don't bother him at all. Mike, because, they got married directly out of the bath.
By Martin Luther King Jr.?
Well, who else? Come on.
While wearing a towel.
But other private human situations don't bother him at all. Michael stays in me all the time, so he comes to the restroom with me and calls these special bonding moments toiletries, says Kathleen. And there are quite a few things about her husband that took Kathleen by surprise. Because, when you're married, you find things out, right? The singer is also quite the chatterbox. He talks a lot to me, which is not what I expected from the shy man I saw on TV all those years I was a fan. He cusses a lot more than I would expect him as a former fan. Also, Michael doesn't always act like the perfect spouse, and he's kind of a perfectionist. He is very bossy and points things out like flaws and mistakes I make, says Kathleen. I assume he got that from his father, so I try to overlook that because I love him and I am not perfect either. Back in the 80s, Michael's father Joe Jackson's image was tarnished because of stories that he was abusive towards his children, allegedly beating them with belt buckles or the cord of an electric kettle, making them practice music for hours every day. And his son Michael reportedly had a very estranged relationship with his dad. But Kathleen, who never met Michael when he was alive on the earth, accepts her husband and his emotional baggage, and she's not about to tell him to beat it.
No!
I see what they did there.
In fact, Kathleen says she feels special that Jackson chose her to be his wife, and they treat their relationship as though we are married. We have our ups and our downs, but Michael, the truth is, I can't stop loving you. Happy wife Kathleen, who has admitted that her supernatural senses have been previously mistaken for schizophrenia.
I don't think it was mistakenly anything.
Says she realizes it's unusual and improbable setup, but insists she's sound of mind and being 100% truthful.
Yeah, like I said, I think we've institutionalized people for less.
So there you go.
Oh my gosh.
It's on YouTube if you want any more details.
Yeah, you know what? That'll probably be something I do tonight. How was that psychic's name that has Michael Jackson inside of her? I'm going to go look this up.
He eats cookies.
I can't wait to see her eat cookies and do Michael Jackson impersonations. This sounds pretty epic, actually.
I won't sing Thriller.
Ooh.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That was quite the article. Thank you for that.
Yes.
I've got evening entertainment now.
Yes, you do.
I got it.
You're going to go home, and your wife is going to call and say, "What on earth? Stop telling him about these insane videos."
That's what I was just going to say. Lindsay's going to be so happy.
Oh, yeah. I'll be sure to share. Don't worry.
Doc, how's your mug?
My mug's doing awesome. I put wassail in it yesterday. It's not really that cool, but it is fall, so we opted to do some wassail, and it's holding up great. That was magical sounding. But yeah, the mug's awesome. There's a lot of great stuff on advancedparanormal.com. You can find Supernatural Hour swag there, including tapestry, shirts, bumper stickers, you name it, and mugs. And the mug has held up fabulously. So
it's pretty.
I like it. It's got
it's
our logo on
mug.
It. So yeah, if you are interested, hop on over to advancedparanormal.com and take a look at what we got.
And Rogue, our swaggy stuff.
Jump on advancedparanormal.com for our swag. We've got our cleansing kits and our sage sprays, lip balms, sage rollers. We're going to have everything out at our events. Remember, those are made local. Thank you for your support.
Yeah, you can order those on our website, advancedparanormal.com, or if you pop up to Logan on the 9th, we're going to have a booth there. We're going to have our booth at the Haunted Hills.
Indian Hills Horror Haunted House, but it's not in Indian Hills anymore. That's where it originated, but the horror has moved to West Provo.
Yeah. So we went to a football game, didn't get home till 1, and then we watched the football game on TV again so we could hear the ESPN commentary. I didn't go to bed till 4 in the morning, so the fact that I'm this coherent is amazing. Amazing.
And is that because your team won?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought I'd let you have a little bragging rights, because that's a pretty big win you got.
We're BYU fans, and we had our huge rivalry game last night, and we won for the first time in 9 games over 12 years, and so we're pretty stoked. And I'm exhausted. And look at my earrings. I have little Y earrings.
Very nice.
And I wore them to church. And there's one little fellow there. He's not a little fellow. He's a teenager, but he told his mom that I am the one true member of the church because I wore BYU blue on my BYU earrings to church today.
There you go. I'm just going to throw this out here. So I looked up Kathleen Roberts' YouTube page. She looks more like Ursula from Little Mermaid than she does Marilyn Monroe. Just, you'll know what I mean.
If Marilyn Monroe was Ursula.
Just Google Kathleen Roberts, Michael Jackson ghost, and you'll see what I'm talking about. That's all I'm saying.
Kathleen, if you're listening, we love you, and you're quirky, and we love that because I'm quirky.
And if you need a prescription for Haldol, give us a ring.
If you haven't, hop onto YouTube. We've got some, our podcasts are there.
AdvancedParanormal.com. Yeah, YouTube/AdvancedParanormal.
Yep, hop over to YouTube. We've had some people that really prefer to watch it on YouTube because they like the visuals. We've got pictures going. Also, hop on TikTok. We've got some fun stuff up on TikTok.
Followers are going up, I saw.
We're almost at 1,400.
Heck yeah.
1,400 followers, so that's pretty exciting.
I was checking out our listen notes score for podcasts a little while back, and we are ranking in the top 2% globally. So.
And you know what? That's all because of you guys. We couldn't.
That's huge.
If we listened to ourselves, if we listened to ourselves, we'd have, you know, 4 listeners. So
maybe 3, and probably 3 listeners.
Dog.
Oh, I'm not saying me. I'm saying one of you guys.
Okay.
thanks a lot.
And I'm just going to give a shout out to, we have listeners internationally.
Oh yeah.
And I'm going to forget somebody, and if I do, since I'm running on 2 hours of sleep. Football. Touchdown. Okay. So is there a Monty Python football reference? Oh, they're drawing a blank. Okay.
They're British, so they don't get into American football.
That's true.
Probably some soccer references.
Well, it doesn't work. So I do know that we have a gal that listens to us on the African continent. I know we have Australian listeners. I know we have...
Swedish. I saw someone from Sweden who left a review.
A Swedish listener. That is not a fart, by the way. I've heard that noise twice. There's just an issue with with the Zoom connection. We have listeners in England.
Canada.
There's one more. I'm forgetting it. Austria? Did I say Australia already?
You said Australia
too?
Already.
But I do believe Austria. So if you're listening to us out of the country, thank you. If you're listening to us in the country, also thank you. We appreciate each and every one of you.
It's been fun to watch.
All 8 of you.
Things grow. I think it's taken more than 8 to get in the top 2% globally. But
just know that we really appreciate you dedicating
your time
to listen to us.
Thank you.
Even though I get kind of crazy sometimes. Quick shout out to Barbary Coast, Oteos, Utah Freeze Dried for Pets, Castle's Nature Studio. He has a new name for that. I need to figure out what it is.
You say that every episode, but...
Do I really?
Yeah. It's close enough.
Why do people listen to us?
I don't know, but top 2%, baby.
Maybe I just make people feel better. People are like, you know what? I'm having a bad day, but I could be raving. I could be that scatterbrained. All right. Maybe one of these days I'll actually put Castle's name of his studio in there correctly.
It's the same reason why people watch Jerry Springer, probably.
I'm just a train wreck. And Boar Off-Road Backcountry Off-Road Adventure Rally.
I think there was an extra off-road in there.
Just, okay, good night. I think I'm done.
And don't forget our favorite groomer. Got our Rescue Pets bathhouse.
Okay. Stay spooky, my haunty friends.
Love you, Nicholas.
Have a good one.
Hey, good night.
You've been listening to The Supernatural Hour at AdvancedParanormal.com. The Supernatural Hour is part of the Radio Ronin Network, found at RadioRonin.com. Copyright 2021 by Advanced Paranormal Services.